All right, I think we're going to try to get started here. I want to thank everyone for coming, especially for the Chevra coming to discuss this very, very crucial topic. We've run this in the past. It's been about 4 or 5 years, and life has changed since then. Now, when we spoke about it last time, the internet was on your laptop, in your room. It was very pervasive, but now it's in everyone's pocket. So the mitzvahs have even changed since we've spoken last time. Rav Sol Salanter points out on the Gemara and Kiddushin on Daf Lamed that says, "In pagavacham nuvel zeh mashteil beis hamedrash." If this menuvel, the Yetzahara, grabs a hold of you, you should schlep him to the beis hamedrash. So the Rav Sol Salanter comments in Miftav Zayin in Or Yisrael. He says that there are different bati midrashos. It's not one generic beis hamedrash. You have to create a beis hamedrash to address that issue, to address that maneuver, that Yetzirah. And that's what we're trying to create tonight, a forum to discuss specifically these inyanim that are relevant to the internet and what people are looking at and how people can get better control. So I want to really thank Rabbi Twersky and Dr. Pelkovitz taking up their time to sit with us tonight and discuss this. We will have some presentations at first. There should be a sheet that went around and also some note cards. If people have questions, they can write it on a note card, pass it up. And we can try to address it, hopefully, if there's time afterwards. So without further ado, Rabbi Twersky.
I don't know too much about the internet. I know nothing about being holy, so I'll be brief. Whenever one has occasion, whenever one is in a forum to share Divrei Torah, so an important part of the sharing of Divrei Torah, the transmission, the communication of Divrei Torah, is to try to pitch it in terms of tone, in terms of substance, in terms of emphasis to one's audience, and to try to individualize that. Here, we were asked to address rather diverse questions, and I think inevitably it won't be properly, fully pitched or calibrated to any one part of the audience. And I very much apologize for that in advance. At times, some of you will correctly feel that perhaps I'm belaboring what's obvious to you. Others may feel that I'm being mekatzer. So Hareini Moser Modoa with a Bakoshas Machila. Clearly the most insidious challenge and pitfall that comes to mind when we're talking about the internet is the problem of pornography that Rahman al-Islam, one can see. Chazal tells us in Ishmartu Mikol Dovara, a pasuk in Sefer Devarim, that Shelo yistakel odin b'isha no'a velo b'beget velo b'bigdei tzeva shal isha. A person shouldn't even look at clothing. Just the clothing. The clothing is on a hanger. There isn't a woman wearing the clothing, because of the associations, because of what that can trigger in terms of hirurim. Chazal continue, a person is not supposed to look at animals, lo b'chamor v'lo b'chamor v'lo b'chazir v'lo b'chazir v'lo b'ofos b'zman shenis kokin zeh l'zeh, when the animals are copulating, because all of these things are prone to triggering hirurim. And v'nishmatu mikol dovera means that we're supposed to guard ourselves from seeing things that trigger hirurim. Again, the examples Chazal give are are very tame compared to what we have to guard ourselves against. Kal v'chomer ben b'no shel kal v'chomer in our context. The fact that something is also is really enough. It doesn't need to be underlined or underscored. But we're dealing with something which is chomer. Chazal say in the Gemara in Yuma that hirhurei avera kosher mei avera. It's a striking comment. Chazal say it. But both the Rambam and the Nefesh HaChaim, amongst the others, relate to that Gemara. Each one within a certain approach. But the Rambam says that what's uniquely human and what's spiritual about a person is the machshava, is the seichel, and when a person defiles that, it's worse than just when his guf, the animalistic side of him, is involved in aveira. So it's like, okay, so the guf is physical, it is animalistic, but the seichel, one's thoughts, so that's the defining tzelem elokim of a person, that's the defining spiritual quality and essence of a person, and that's how the Rambam understands the Maimon Chazal, that the hirhurei avera, kosher mei avera, the Nefesh HaChaim, within his worldview, the two enrich each other. The Nefesh HaChaim, within his worldview, says that in terms of the cosmic repercussions of what one does, what one says, what one thinks, again, for the same reason that the Rambam says, because machshava is the most spiritual element of the person, so its cosmic repercussions are greater and they reverberate further and higher, and that's how he says pshat in that hirhurei avera akoshin mei avera. Rashi in Parsha Shlach comments on the pasuk of Alos Asura Acharei Levavchem. So Rashi says that ha'ayin roa and ha'lev chomed, and that's how a person gets drawn, rachmanu litzlan, into averus. My son shared with me, I think it was a tape that we listened to. I don't think he just related to me. I think he actually played the tape for me. But Matis Yo Solomon explaining that from this Rashi, one sees that the crucial point, the crossroads in a life of Kedusha V'Tahara or Rachmana Litzlan, something different, is in the Shmiras Ayinayim, in terms of what one sees, because it all begins with Ayin Roa. Begins with Ayin Roa. The imagination of the Yetzer Hara is fed by visual image. What I don't know about, I can't be chomed. If I've never been exposed to something, I don't know about it, I can't be chomed. The Yetzer Hara is not going to take me there. If I see it, I'm exposed to it. So ha'ayin roa, so that feeds the Yetzer Hara, ha'lev chomed. So the crossroads, in terms of whether one is headed to Kedusha V'Tahara or elsewhere, Rachmanu Litzlan, not 100% on the right path, it begins with what our eyes see. Rabbonim, who are Morei Hora'a, will tell us, distinguished mental health professionals will also tell us that involvement in these things continues to, and Rachmanu Litzlan, if we allow it to, destroy marriages, destroy families. There are many more Mari Makomos and perspectives One can look, just to give one example, in Maseilas Yesharim, the parak about Pirtei Midas Nikiyus. Ramchal has a lot of divrei chizuk for us on these inyanim there as well. A hallmark of halacha and the Torah's approach to kedusha is realism. The Torah is very realistic. There are other religions that talk in very highfalutin terms about kedusha, and their lack of kedusha ends up being spread all over the front pages. And the Torah's approach is, the Torah is very realistic. Chazal tell us, the Rambam quotes it at the end of Hilchos Yisuri Biya, Gezel v'arayis nafsho shel odom misaveh lehenu mechamdosan. We have a very strong Yetzirah. We have a very, very strong Yetzirah for arayis. And the truth is, if we're honest, we know this independently. Even if we haven't come across the Gemara, even if we haven't come across the Halach and the Rambam, if we're honest with ourselves, so we know it. We know it from within. We have a very strong Yetzirah for arayis. Now, of course, whenever we're talking about any Yetzirah, so being mischazek in Yerushalayim, of course, is an antidote to any Yetzirah. It's an antidote to any Yetzirah. Kshayosim ha'odam el libo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem Elocha la'aretz kivado omed alav v'ro'a v'masav. So miyad, says the Rambam, quoting from the Rambam, a person becomes a Yerei Shamayim, and Yetzirahs are inhibited. So of course, whenever we deal with any Yetzirah, a major element of the approach, and a major element of the package, is that we need to be mischazek in Yerei Shamayim. We need to be mischazek in Yerushalayim in general, and as it applies and as it expresses itself in whatever area where we're encountering the Nisayan. But Lemaisa, more than that is required as well. Chazal tell us in Gemara and Sanhedrin that la'olam al yovi adam atzmali de nisayim. No matter how many musa svarim one is holding in, and no matter how much of a kviyas one has for learning musa, al yovi adam atzmali de nisayim. And Chazal say that mi lanu gadol mi davar hamelech, and davar hamelech hevi atzmali de nisayim, and he was nechshal. So yes, of course, we should be mischazeg in Yerushalayim, and again, it has to be what a person should learn, how much he should learn, has to be individualized. Obviously, in a general public forum, it can't be specified. But we also, being mischazeg in Yerushalayim, doesn't relieve us of the responsibility of looking to, as much as possible, reduce nisyonos, not to expose ourselves unnecessarily, gratuitously, to a greater degree of nisayon than the world itself imposes upon us. There's no reason that we should open ourselves up to a greater degree of nisayon than that which the Western world of Tovshin Ayin Hei imposes upon us. And here, just to comment on a certain mindset, that there's a mindset which I think many of us are drawn into, that if the technology exists, so we should take advantage of it. And as every phone is upgraded, and as they go from being foolish to smart, and soon they'll be brilliant and super genius. So if the phone's getting smarter, so then we need to avail ourselves of it. And the benefits are certainly undeniable. Every time someone tells me they were caught in traffic and they took out their phone and the phone has an app and the phone told them where to drive and they got out of the traffic jam. So I can understand why people have smartphones and I wonder, you know, and the Yetzer Hara is. There's a Giva Yetzer Hara, and all the convenience and the efficiency that the convenience allows is certainly something we value. It's certainly very much a Torah value to maximize one's time, to make the most of one's time, to be efficient with one's time is certainly part of any religious person, any Ben Torah's approach to life is we're supposed to live as productively as possible. To live as productively as possible means to use our time as well and as efficiently as possible. And there's no question that the technology allows us to do it. It allows people to live potentially more efficiently and potentially more productively. But that consideration, that shikul, doesn't preclude and doesn't trump all others. When Chazal say that if a person has to go from point A to point B, and along the way there are noshim ha'omdos al ha'kvisa, and because of that there's going to be an issue of histaklus. So if islay darka achrina, say he's supposed to opt for the other way. Chazal don't say only if it's as quick, only if it doesn't involve going an extra few miles out of the way. Conveniences and efficiency are values, but they don't trump all other values, and they don't override l'olam al yovi adam atzmo lidei nisayon. How much of a nisayon is it? To have internet in one's dorm room and not have to go to the library, how much of a nisayon is it to have it on one's phone? V'chol eis u'v'chol sho'ah. For everyone, it's a nisayon. How much of a nisayon is going to vary from individual to individual. I don't think anyone can give it an absolute value. Anyone can assign it an absolute value, but A, it's an assign for everyone. The younger you are, the stronger the Yetzer Hara is. So the more of an assign is, when a person is single, then the assign is even greater. Which is not to say the Yetzer Hara disappears. After one gets married, the Yetzer Hara is alive and healthy after one gets married as well, but it's even stronger when one is single. It's a very big nisayon. The fact that it's inconvenient, the fact that it means foregoing again efficiency, foregoing convenience. So what? If that's the way to reduce the nisayon, if the way to reduce nisayon is not to take advantage of internet in one's dorm room, and the way to reduce the nisayon is to not have a smartphone, to disable, I don't know what I'm talking about, to disable the internet from the smartphone. So it's worth paying the price in terms of convenience and efficiency, because convenience and efficiency don't trump all other Torah values and Torah considerations. Nafsha shel adam chamdoson u'misav lahen, it's a strong Yetzer Hara. And le'olam al yavi adam atzmo lidei nisayon. The same is true in terms of, again, not that a person should... A person shouldn't be relying on filters to the exclusion of being mischazek in Yerushalayim. A person should also It's not for me to talk about this in such august company. There are certain psychological, mental health considerations that can make a person more prone to being susceptible to pornography, Rahman al-Islam, that a person also has to be mindful of and also has to address. But whatever a person can do, he has to assess what his level of nisayan is, and it has to be addressed. And it has to be addressed. And the fact that it creates inconvenience, the fact that it means foregoing the latest technology, so what? That's not a reason that we should be deterred from it. We should avail ourselves, again, not that any of them are foolproof, not that there's any infallibility. We should avail ourselves of whatever the best filters are, whatever the best buddy systems are. We should avail ourselves of all that, again, not to the exclusion of being mischazik in your shemaim, not to the exclusion of dealing with whatever mental health issues may make a person more susceptible to such entanglements. If a person has already become addicted, so A, he should know that he's not alone. He's not the only person who's struggling with such an issue. B, that there's a famous vote from the Kotzka, right? The first sugya in Eilu Mitzia is Machlokas Abai and Rav about the Yeyush Shel Amidas. So there's a famous vote from the Kotzka. The Kotzka says, Yeyush, a person is Messiah Shel Amidas. Only a person's love about Das is going to be Messiah. A person is never supposed to be Messiah. So Yitachein, that a person can find himself addicted. It's not a reason to be messiahish. There's no such thing as the person not being able to break that addiction. It doesn't mean that it's going to be easy. It doesn't mean that it's going to be a painless, smooth process and road. But of course, a person can. Yeyush is shalom idas. He should seek help. He should seek help from as appropriate from mental health professionals, who are learned both in the mental health side as well as whatever halachic considerations need to be brought to bear. If a person is not sure whether the mental health professional has the second set of credentials, then he should, on his own, he should create a partnership with a Rav. He should be checking with a Rav, whatever the approach that the mental health professional is suggesting for him. Just to touch, I think I already went over time here, but just to touch very quickly on two or three other areas in terms of internet and chayotzebo entanglement. Chafetz Chaim writes, well, in the very beginning of Sefer Chafetz Chaim, he says, Lashon Hara doesn't have to be through dibur. It's not exeris hakosov in speech, right? As a matter of fact, if you look, the lav in the Torah doesn't say anything about dibur. It's oselech rochel. Not even formulated in terms of speech. So the Chafetz Chaim lived in a much more innocent world than we do, so he wrote about writing Lashon Hara. But in terms of Lashon Hara and Rechilas, so there's electronic Lashon Hara and Rechilas is subject to all the same Isurim and Gedorim as oral Lashon Hara and Rechilas. And the fact that the Lashon Hara Rechilas is online doesn't in any way diminish it. If anything, as the Chafetz Chaim says, the greater the audience for the Lashon Hara and Rechilas, so then the more magnified and compounded the issue is, and it's certainly something which we need to be very, very, very mindful of. There's another thing. another thing to which one can be prone online, I think the technical term for it is hacking. Not hacking, I don't know about that, but the technical term for it is hacking, which basically means when Yoshe Kronos are sitting and writing and having nonsensical, non-consequential, sub-intelligent exchanges about Dorim shall Mabachach. How much of a concern is that? I mean, it's Dvarim Shel Mabachach, right? We're not talking about Lashon Hara Chilus now. So listen to this extraordinary Rambam at the end of Hilchos Tumas Tzaras. The Rambam writes that the Torah tells us, Zocha Esa She'osa Hashem Al-Kechel Miriam. Miriam didn't intend to denigrate Moshe Rabbeinu. L'diva v'gnusa, she made an innocent mistake, and nevertheless, the Torah describes how HaKadosh Baruch Hu deals with her. And then the Rambam writes as follows, and listen to these few lines of Osai, it's staggering. Kal v'chom l'vnei odom harishon hatipshim, shemarbim l'daber gidolos v'neflos. V'zehu derech, I skip two lines, v'zehu derech yeshivas haleitzim harishon. A letz in this context is someone, a scoffer, someone who scoffs. V'zehu derech yeshivas haleitzim harishon, b'tchilo marbin b'divei havai, ki'inyan shenem avakol ksil b'rov dvarim. U'mitoch kach bor nesafi b'gnosa tzadikim, skipping a line, mitoch kach yi alon hergel adabim menevim, u'mitoch kach bor nadabim b'elokim v'kofim v'ika. So the Rambam describes this frightening, terrifying escalation. It escalates into speaking against Chachamim. It escalates into speaking against Nevi'im. It escalates, Rahman al-Islam, into speaking against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does it begin with? It begins with Divei Havai. It doesn't begin with Lashon Hara Nechilus. It begins with emptiness. It begins with chatting. It begins with emptiness. It begins with emptiness. It means life is empty. Life is empty. So then... Such emptiness breeds not good things. Just vacuity, emptiness. Marvin did kol ksil berov dvarim. Not lashon hara, not mechilas, not chirav v'giduf. Shtus, nothingness, emptiness, vacuity, chatting. Nothingness, and that's what triggers Rachmana Litzlan this escalation. I don't know the names of all the things out there, but there's a lot that invites it. And last, but certainly not least, the bittul zman, which can result from just constant and by definition excessive use of the internet. The bittul zman is something which is terrifying. I think the Chafetz Chaim once commented that the Mashiach Muhammad says, "Miu isha shebana bayis v'lo chanacho yelech v'yoshav lebeis so pen yomos ba milchama v'isha che yach nachem." How's it go? Yach nachem, something like that. I don't know if I got the nekudas right. That if a person built a house, so then he's chozer me'orche ha'milchoma, because maybe Rachmana Litzlan will be killed, and all that work will have been for naught. He won't even get a chance to make a Chanukah sabayis. So he must have built this mansion, right? So what's a shear of a bias to qualify for being chozer me'orche ha'milchoma? So says the Gemara, dalet amos to dalet amos. He must have spent 10 minutes on it. A dalet amos by dalet amos, 6 feet by 6 feet, maybe 8 feet by 8 feet. So that's already a bias, and the Torah says, hayitachin, that we should, Rachmana Litzlan, put this person in harm's way, and those 10 minutes that he spent building the house will be for naught. The bittel zman that's associated with it, the less access we have, the less prone we are. If it's not in our homes and if it's not in our dorm rooms, and we'll have access when we really need it. If we really need it, we'll have it in the library. If we really need it, we'll have it in the office. The less access we have, the less prone we are to all of this. Again, those things which lend themselves to other reductions of nisyona, such as filters, buddies, v'chulu, all that, the chizuk in Yerush Shemayim. Rabbi Bacon reminded me that a few years ago when we had this program, I told the following story, and I'll end with that. Again, in terms of those of us who perhaps are already struggling with some form of addiction in terms of the use of the internet, that the story was told by the Talmud Rebbe in Yerushalayim. The story concerns he and in his youth he was Mashamish, the Gary Rebbe, then it was the Beis Yisrael, and he, the current Talmud Rebbe in Yerushalayim, received a letter from a friend of his, that a friend had come to him nafsho b'shelaso, that he felt this urge to shmad, rechamon letzlan, just felt this urge to shmad, rechamon letzlan, and the urge kept on getting stronger and stronger, and he just didn't know what to do with it. So he asked him to go into the Gerev, to go into the Beis Yisrael, and ask him for an Eitzah. So when the Beis Yisrael heard the question, he was very, very upset, very, very agitated to hear that a Jew, Rachman al-Islam, was struggling with something like that, was on the precipice, Rachman al-Islam, very agitated. So he was pacing back and forth and thinking, and then he says, give me a Gemara Shabbos, please. Give me a Gemara Shabbos. He opens the Gemara Shabbos. He points to the Maim Chazal that Kol Ona Omen Yeshmerav B'Vachol Kolcho Afilu Yeshbo Shemetz Avodah Zarah or Afilu Oved Avodah Zarah Kedor Shel Enosh is Mochlama. He says to him, what's the Lima from this Gemara? So the Talmud Rebbe was telling the story. He says very self-deprecatingly, the limud is that if you answer Amen Yehishmer Rabbi B'chol Kolcho, so even if you were Oded Avodah Zarah, Kedar Shalanosh is Mochem Lo. And the Beis Yisrael says, no. What's the limud from this Gemara? So the Beis Yisrael says, the limud from this Gemara is that even if Rachman Letzlan, a person was Oded Avodah Zarah, Kedar Shalanosh, he's still capable of answering Amen Yehishmer Rabbi B'chol Kolcho. A person can we can make mistakes, we can get ourselves into difficult predicaments, we can get ourselves entangled with all kinds of problems. A person still has the capacity, again, not only literally to answer Amen Yehishmer Rabbi B'chol Kolcho, but all that represents and that symbolizes as well, and to extricate himself and dov ha'omed the b'fnei ha'tshuva.
Let me just start by saying that everything I'm going to be saying, goes without saying, I'm speaking as a psychologist. I'm not speaking with any kind of authority like you just heard, okay? My words are reflecting my own opinions. I hope they're properly integrating Torah values with what psychology tells us in this area, but it's a tough area to talk about. Even in terms of the impact of the internet, I'm going to talk mostly about the impact of the internet in terms of Kedusha, but I don't know how many of you are familiar with the phenomenon of the online disinhibition effect, which is all the research that's showing that when we go online, when we text people, when we email people, when we communicate in an online forum, because we don't have the eye contact, because we're alone in a room, there's a tendency to be much more cruel. There's a tendency for empathy to go all the way down, and there's a tendency for our judgment to go out the window. So the head of the CIA, right? The head of the CIA, top spy in the country, who's one of the most disciplined men around, four-star general leading the war in Afghanistan, and when he goes online, he forgets when he texts his mistress that Ayin Roos and Shamas Kol Masech B'Sefer Nechtavim, anybody could see it. But how could that be? It's because the nature of our communications online is such that however careful we are in terms of Shmiras HaLashon, however careful we are in terms of our Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, it is 100 times more difficult to be careful about it. I think that's an extremely important issue that is I'm very happy that it was raised, because I wasn't going to talk about it, but I just wanted to talk about that just for a minute. Okay. I want to make a few core points about a little bit about some thoughts about approaches in this area, in the area of dealing with the challenge. Number one is the fact that secrecy breeds shame and shame breeds powerlessness. I don't mean secrecy in terms of sneers. I mean the inability to talk about these challenges, the ability to surface it in terms of getting clarity about what your goals are, almost guarantees that you're not going to be able to easily control it. So it's very important. I think the value of a night like tonight is to talk about issues that are often not talked about and aren't dealt with. The other part of this psychological truth, I believe, is that guilt that's characterized by pathological levels of self-blame, where you feel you're an evil, horrible, terrible person, and that's paralyzing, that is something that tends to undermine control, as opposed to the kind of guilt that we want to engender here, which is busha as a step-back response, constructive shame, constructive guilt, which is very, very healthy in this situation. The word busha, some say, is tied to the word yavesh, a break in the flow. Where in the Torah do we have the word busha? It's Vayar Ha'am Kiboshesh Moshe, okay? Holding back. Sisera's mother, Kiboshesh Melova, worried that he's not coming back quickly enough. So what's busha? In every culture in the world, you know how you show that kind of shame? It's a step-back response. It's the same nonverbal way of showing shame. You step back and you look down. That's the universal symbol of shame. And that part of busha is a constructive stepping back and saying, is this what I want to be doing? Is this something that is worthy of my values, which is the essence of what Kedusha is about? And to the extent that you could develop a mindset in dealing with these challenges, a mindset that goes from threat to challenge, to say to yourself, okay, I could do this, and this is something that's extremely important to me, the research shows that when you go from threat to challenge, it makes all the difference in the world in terms of energizing you as opposed to paralyzing you. That kind of constructive busha. It says in the Sifrei Musar, that's a tafshit l'chol hamidos. It's a basic foundational underpinning of all the midos. And that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about that kind of constructive busha. So that's the first point I wanted to make. Number two. The idea that self-control is a muscle. I don't know how many of you know the work of Baumeister. Some of you may have learned about Baumeister's work. It's basically the idea is that self-control, especially in this area, because this area is such an incredibly difficult area to have control over, especially when you're young and single, as Rutorsky said, it's easy to get tired. So what we know is that when you're stressed out, either because of something going on in your life, or you're stressed out because you're feeling terrible about your problems in this area, or you're stressed out because of midterms or finals, or applying to graduate schools or whatever you might be stressed out about, it's going to be more of a challenge for you, which means that you have to figure out a way to think about this even more mindfully. Let me give you an example in a whole different realm of Baumeister's work. Baumeister's students looked at a group of judges in Israel who were hearing cases to look at early release from prison. They found that if you're lucky enough to have your case heard the first case of the day, you were likely going home early. Because the judge is in a good mood, he's rested, he's feeling good. If you're unlucky enough to have your case heard just before lunch, you're exponentially more likely to go back to jail for another couple of years. First case after lunch, you're probably going home. Last case before 5 o'clock, you're going back to jail. So Baumeister's students did a very simple intervention. They gave the judges sweetened lemonade to sip on just before lunch and just before 5 o'clock. And when they did that, it went back to total justice in terms of there was no longer the bias of being sent back to jail, perhaps unfairly without the justice, because you were tired. What does that have to do with what we're talking about here? Just to realize that you have to be doubly careful, the ma'od ma'od that we talk about in this area in times of stress, and you have to build added gedarim in times of stress. Next, I wanted to talk a drop about just to echo what Rutorsky was saying, to normalize a little bit this struggle. You know, there's this, the Rambam bringing down the Gemara, it says, "Ein lecha davar b'chol ha'tarah kula shukasha l'rofa av l'frosh elemen arayos." Nothing tougher than this area. Babios ha'suros. Amru chachamim, b'shosh and estava Yisrael al ha'arayos. You know how we responded to hearing about the need to be in control in this area? We cried, bachlu, v'kiblu, we were mekabel this with tears and pain. So that's an important part, is that to the extent that you feel completely alone in this struggle, at least there's some research actually done in the firm community that shows it tends to undermine control. When you feel less alone, and you feel, study I always quote, right, they take somebody, they put them at the bottom of the hill, they say, estimate the steepness of this hill. If you're alone, you see the hill is very steep. If you have somebody at your side, the hill looks less steep. The closer you are to the person at your side, the less steep the hill looks and less tired you get walking up the hill. And just to remember that you're not alone in this. It's a real challenge, but it's a challenge that's actually very much something that could be dealt with. Let me, just for the sake, I know we have questions, I just want to talk a little bit about setbacks and then I'll end with the story. A lot of this issue is how you deal with your setbacks. And there's a psychology that sometimes takes over, that when there are setbacks, let's say in times of stress, and this is an area that very often there's an ebb and a flow to it, and there are setbacks sometimes. The key is to understand them when there are setbacks, to understand that you don't then use that as a trigger to give up. What does the Gemara say? If your breath smells from garlic, the answer isn't to then eat another clove of garlic. If there's a setback, the key question then becomes is how do you bring that into a cheshbon ha-nefesh, where you look at, okay, what was the trigger here? There's something in psychology called a chain analysis. When am I most likely to have a problem in this area? What's going on just before the setback? To get involved in a tshuva process, okay, tshuva in the sense that a chait, as we know, is missing the mark, right? We know that the archers of Shevet Binyamin, lo yachti, they never miss the mark. When you view the setback, that it's okay, you missed the mark, but you got to do over now. Let's see how to do it differently. So chain analysis means, what was happening just before? What was I feeling? Was it because I was alone in my dorm room? Was it because there are certain triggers for me where I'm sort of lying to myself and I know I'm setting myself up to be able to go and be nichshol in this area, and to just look at it with brutal honesty about the triggers, about what's happening, and about ways of trying to deal with it. And there's so many ways of trying to deal with it, like Rutorsky said. So it could be with just redoubling your learning. It could be with building in the support of a friend. It could be with the very real help of filtering and monitoring programs really helping sometimes. It doesn't mean it's going to help all the time, but it helps a certain percentage of the time. And when you combine all of these issues, it starts to make an enormous difference. You know, I'll just end with a quick vignette and a quick story, and then I think we have some questions to talk about. The vignette is just an interesting vignette. In Malaysia, in pre-colonial times, adolescents used to do something called running amok. It's still a word in the English language. You know what it would mean when you would run amok? Adolescents would go nuts. And they would go on a rampage and they'd destroy everything in their house. They'd go out on the streets and break windows. And they vandalized everything in their way. And the adults in Malaysia said, oh, okay, this is running amok. You know, this is what adolescents do for a living. So it was very much tolerated. The British came in, they took control over that country, and they see that there's this real problem that all the teenagers are running amok. So what do? They immediately announce a new law under the British legal system saying two things. If your child runs amok, you have to pay all the damages. And the second thing is, if your child runs amok, they're going to be held criminally responsible, and they're probably going to go to jail. Do you know that the phenomenon of running amok disappeared 100% overnight? That's the power of all of this. Let me end with the story, okay? And then there are a lot of wonderful questions that you asked that I think we have to talk about. I'll end with the story, but before I go to the story, I just wanted to say, and many of the questions had to do with struggles and who to go to for help and things like that. I do want to say that if it's crossed the line into addictive behavior that's interfering with your functioning, and that you're doing this and you feel like you just don't have, you don't have control over this, and it's getting in the way of your relationships, and getting in the way of your being able to connect either in your marriage or with being able to go out and figure out who you're going to end up with, and it's getting in the way with just your ability to feel good about yourself, that point, it does make self to go, preferably to a specialist in the area. And in this area in particular, it really has to be somebody who is, I believe, totally reflects our values, because they're not going to get it. If you do a computer search on how to deal with the issue of Sasara Levatala, nothing will come up in the field of psychology. Okay, nothing, because it's not considered a problem. Anywhere in the world, it's not considered a problem. Only very firm Catholics. There's some literature from them, but there's virtually no research on it. So in this area, more than any other area, you have to go to somebody who really gets that and understands it and respects it, and it's a Shomer Torah mitzvah. We have wonderful people here at the Counseling Center. Speaking as an individual who's had wonderful experience, we're really lucky. We have really good people here. It's actually, I spend most of my career in hospital-based with some really excellent therapists working with me. The people here are really top-notch. We happen to have the director, the co-director of the clinic right here uptown is Martin Gala, who was kind enough to join us, and who himself could be very helpful. But the therapists there, I think I know all of them, and they're amazing. They're really amazing people. And it could be totally anonymous. You go, you just email with supervision, counseling@yu.edu, and everything is done very discreetly in a private way. And if it's something that needs, let's say, more long-term kind of help, they could be very helpful in helping you find experts. I know there are also people who have wonderful reputations in the firm community who really are specialists in this area. I know that Rabbi Tversky has, and I have spoken about some people who we know are really, really excellent if you end up going privately for this. So there are many, many resources to go to, and I just wanted to make that point. Let me end with this story. It's a little bit of a strange story. Some of you may have heard it, but with it, we'll do it anyway. Sri Lanka. My main area is trauma. Okay? How many of you heard my Sri Lanka story? Very few. Okay, you did. Okay. Here's the Sri Lanka story. My main area is trauma, so because of that, I sometimes get pulled to going to different parts of the world where there's a big traumatic event. And I was asked to spend a couple of weeks in Sri Lanka after the tsunami there, where unfortunately there were many, many tens of thousands of deaths there. And I was working with 40 doctors, training the trainers, training them to help them help the people of this devastated country. And the doctor who was the physician for the southernmost tip of the country told me the following story, and with this I'll sit down. He said, by some miracle, he was standing outside of his house on the morning of the tsunami. He was like stretching his arms, and his house is built a little bit in the middle towards the top of a mountain, and he sees the tsunami coming. He says, you have no idea what it's like. It's like seeing buildings the size of the skyscrapers here in Manhattan coming at you in slow motion. He said it was like the most unbelievably terrifying experience he ever had in his life. You go into fight or flight, you don't think in a moment like that. And he runs in and he grabs his mother in one hand, his wife in the other, takes his three-year-old daughter, puts her on his shoulders, and with superhuman strength, he runs up to the top of the mountain, just high enough to save all of them. But now, he's in a state of yiddish. He realizes he saved his immediate family, but he's looking down on the town that he grew up in, the town that he's the doctor for, and it's gone. It's gone. It's totally washed away. And he just figures, look, there's nothing I could do. He said then the strangest thing happened to him. A voice goes in his head, probably going back 20 years when he was in third grade, he tells me. He was struggling with a math problem. His teacher came over to him and just said a simple sentence. You know something? If something is difficult, you have to do it. If something's impossible, you have to try a little harder. And with that voice in his head, he says he has no idea why it came into his head. It's like a little spark of Ma'at min ha'ardo ha'harbe min ha'choshech. With that voice in his head, if something is difficult, you have to do it. If something's impossible, you have to try a little harder. He rushes down the hill, and he saves 9 more people. 9 people alive today because he somehow was inspired by that message from a generation earlier. That's the message. This is difficult. And at times it may even feel impossible. But the challenge to us is the challenge of self-control. Much tougher challenge for you guys than it was when I was your age. When I was, you know, learning in yeshiva at your age, it was so much easier, you know? If you wanted to somehow get a hold of pornography, I mean, you'd have to go to a store and you have to make sure nobody would see you and you'd have to overcome your anxiety. It was just so hard. Very few people did it, I think. At least in my world, very few people did it. Today, it's all here, okay? It's all here. And it's so much harder to do it. I know some people would say, like the Gemara tells us, you have to break the dice and get rid of it. I know that that's probably not the answer for most of you, right? In the balance between isolation and inoculation, the answer for most of us is inoculation. But the bottom line is to remember, if something is difficult, you have to do it. If something's impossible, you have to try a little harder. And remember, they stopped running amok in Malaysia. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you, Rich Risky, Dr. Falkovitz, for that very enlightening both drushes. We had some questions that were submitted earlier, which we will go through some of them now. Also, there are note cards that were passed around. If people want to submit a question, we don't have a lot more time, but you can write a question, just pass it to the person in front of you, just pass them up somehow. Also, there's a basic fact sheet on some basic filters, some tools that are out there that can help give people chizuk, can help people stay in control. One of the questions that was submitted is, should a person hold off from beginning to date if they're struggling with internet-related shmiras ha'inayim issues?
So someone like to address that? Shiloh.
What's that? Say it again.
Should someone hold off from beginning to date?
I was checking my email.
Yeah. Yeah. Long's not the internet. If they're struggling with the related shmiras hayinayim issues on the internet, should they begin dating?
Yeah,
or should they hold
off? So I said, I think it's a wonderful question. I love to hear what Rabbi Twersky says, but I think it has to do with the main point here is if you feel that if the struggle crosses the line to an addiction, meaning that you feel you have no control over, it's interfering with your functioning, that basically it's taken over. What I hear over and over again, getting married is probably not going to stop it. Like Rabbi Twersky said, it's just not going to stop it. There are still challenges, and there are times, you know, there are times that once that takes over, the nature of especially internet pornography is it becomes preferable for some people actually being with their wife, no matter how good a relationship they have in terms of intimacy with their wife. So I believe that if it's hit the point of addiction or a real serious problem, then absolutely. If it's something, though, that has not taken over your life, it's something that you're struggling with, but for the most part it's under control. Unfortunately, the statistics are that once guys are using the internet, and I'm not saying this in any way to normalize it, but percentages of guys who were using pornography, unfortunately, it's become so common that if you feel that you could get better control over it, and then in every other area you're ready to go out, and it hasn't taken over, I think that then at that point, I think there's no reason, for my way of thinking, to say that you shouldn't date. Obviously, this is something you're going to have to really get a handle on. I was, and then I'll be quiet. I went to a program in Manhattan a couple of weeks ago. I was asked to speak to a group of parents in Manhattan, parents of modern Orthodox schools, very modern Orthodox schools, a number of schools here in the city. And I was shocked, and I don't shock easily, because the principals of one of the schools, it's actually a modern Orthodox school, told me that in her school, half of the third graders have smartphones. 100% of the fourth graders have smartphones. And the fourth graders is totally unfiltered, totally unmonitored. So in fourth grade, they're downloading pornographic pictures, bringing them to school. But here, it's the lack of busha that gets to me. She told me that just a couple of weeks ago, fourth grader, she sees him, you know, trading pornographic pictures with another fourth grader. So she takes the phone away. She literally took the phone away. And she gets an angry call from the mother saying, how dare you take my kid's phone away? And I demand that you give it back. She said, I'm not giving it back. This is not acceptable. So you know what the mother did? The next day, the kid came to school with a brand new iPhone 6. So that's the baseline. When you look at the percentages of those kids who are going to probably develop a serious problem, it's actually probably about 50% who will probably become addicted if that continues in a way that will impact on intimacy in their marriage, impact on their view of women, will impact on their expectations, and impact in all kinds of really bad ways. So bottom line is, well, I answered it already.
Agree in terms of when it crosses the line into an addiction, that it's something that needs to be resolved before one begins dating. If it's an ongoing struggle, which wouldn't be classified as an addiction, I don't know what the answer is. I'm not a Mori Havora. Even if I thought I knew what the answer was, I'm not sure that I could say, because it's different than ever. A person doesn't have to be perfect to get married. Otherwise, all shatran are gonna go out of business. So a person doesn't have to be perfect to get married. And we're all working on imperfections, and we're all struggling, and we're all hopefully a work in process. But what's unique here, my guess is that very understandably and legitimately, a wife is going to feel more betrayed and hurt by a husband who is dabbling in such things than if he's dealing with some other struggle or some other imperfection. You know, they used to be, I don't know if there still is, one of the potato chip brands, you can't eat only one. I don't know how devastating that's going to be. But this is devastating. There is a sense of betrayal. There's a sense of personal hurt, even if it's understood that it's a problem that antedated the relationship. And I don't know, it's complicated. It's complicated in terms of because of the fact that it certainly has implications, they know that they know, in terms of what needs to be disclosed up front. And so certainly if it crossed the line to an addiction, I think it's clear, BS or Bukusta, that's something which it's not a hurrah. I think that it's something that has to be resolved first. If it's less than that, but it's something which is a real, it's still a real factor in one's life, I think you have to find another hurrah who has the ability to deal with such questions and get the individualized psak and hadracha.
Okay, it is getting a little late, but we'll try to take just a couple more questions. You know, how much does a person have to shy away from jobs that really do involve, and maybe it's everything these days, I don't know, jobs that do heavily involve social media and things of that nature that require a lot of involvement and knowledge of the social media? Is that something that's, you know, insurmountable or can be dealt with properly?
Sounds like a very interesting question.
You don't know what social media is.
Okay. So social media is like Facebook. I can't answer it from anything other than that. I'll just give a psychological answer. Psychological answer is that I think that the nature of the way the world is changing is that virtually any job is going to require use of a computer. Some more with social media and actually using social media, some with less. Again, the key is, if you're using it as a tool, like any tool, it could be used for good purposes or it could be used for bad purposes. Rav Palm, my Rebbe, Zatzal, used to say that the litmus test for knowing, he would talk about in terms of happiness, of simcha. He'd say, what's the difference between simcha and happiness? It's how you feel the morning after. So the morning after New Year's, you're all hungover. He says, that's happiness. It's not simcha. The morning after a simcha shel mitzvah, you feel terrific. That's what the research is showing on social media like Facebook. If you're using it either in a way to hurt people or in a way to make yourself be blown up, or in a way that you're sort of passively looking and comparing yourself to others and feeling really badly about it, or you're bad-mouthing others, it's associated with depression and bad stuff. If you're using it as a tool for chesed and as a tool for a legitimate business use in terms of, just what you're doing for your job, but not as a way of being over on Doraisas like Ona or Lashon, or you know, or being over on Lashon Hara, then obviously I think that it's become a tool no different than, well, not fundamentally different than writing or than typing or anything like that. That's just my first reaction. I don't know that it's going to be possible to work in your lifetime with totally inoculating yourself, totally isolating yourself from the reality of computers and from having to, wherever you're going to end up, it could be in medicine, it could be in law, it could be in marketing, it could be, I can't imagine a job that doesn't in some way utilize all the different platforms that the internet now contains. Does that make sense? I don't know.
So I'm going to read my question because it's like a little bit longer. So essentially, please, rabbis and sadhus, help us understand. The Torah states in the beginning, Adam nechaber both naked, saying being naked isn't by definition bad. Then it requires us to be fruitful and multiply. Medically, we have a need for sex, as proven through physical experience and studies, as with many neurotic disorders that people don't have sex. So on the one hand, you obligate us and give us an essential need. And on the other hand, you forbid us. You give me a need, and then you forbid me. How can you how can you forbid me from thinking of doing my mitzvah? By definition, it will lead to other thoughts. You will say this before Eitz Hadas, fine, but we still need sex. Thousands of years later, nonetheless, we acquire desires at 12-13, so you get the solution is 12-13, but it's not possible. On top of that, by the age of 20, you'll think about it anyway, because it's written in the Gemara that you think about it every day. So, I mean, we haven't approached the problem, but, you know, you put a guy in the cookie store and he says, don't look at cookies. He needs, by definition, to look at cookies.
Thank you for the question. The question is an excellent question. I guess to follow up on the mushel, I think rule number one about dieting. that should be readily apparent. Not as much as I should know about it, but I do know about this. So rule number one is if I have if I like chocolate rugelach and I need to go on a diet, the more effective way to go on a diet is not to have the chocolate rugelach at home and tell myself I'm not going to eat them. But it is not to have chocolate and rugelach at home. And of course, it's true. It is a mitzvah to get married. There is a mitzvah period of Rivia. And because of that, there is a Yetzirah. The Gemara says that if the Yetzirah would be taken away, so then people wouldn't get married and there wouldn't be period of Rivia. But because it's a Yetzirah, so we're supposed to do our best, and there's a lot that we absolutely can do in this direction. We're supposed to do our best to channel it and address it in the context of Kedusha that is available to us. To use the moshel, if we're not supposed to look at cookies, then we shouldn't go into the cookie store. The Ein HaChanami, that once one goes into the cookie store, it's going to be inevitable. So that's why there is so much stress on Shmir Sinai. That's why there is, that's why it says in Shulchan Aruch and in Simon Shin Zayin that the Giru Yetzirah is also. The Yetzirah is very strong, but it can be channeled into correct, proper avenues. It certainly is a challenge to do so, and a real challenge, but not an impossible one. And if it seems impossible, so we heard that beautiful approach. There's nothing in the mitzvah satora which can't be addressed in a context of Kedusha. If a person is ready for it emotionally, so he should get married at a younger age, which is why the Torah does advocate that. He has to be ready emotionally. has to know how to live with another person. You can't just get married because of the Yetzirah. There are other emotional prerequisites for getting married. But that if those are in place, so we do advocate early marriage for that reason.
Okay.
Can I add?
All right, it is getting late. I think we will kind of wrap up here. I'm sorry we didn't get to every question. I want to thank, again, Dr. Pelkowitz, our Turski. If people want to daven Meir, we can daven Meir in a couple of minutes to meet downstairs. And I want to mechazik everyone to take all the advice that we heard tonight and to never be miyayesh and to take proper appropriate steps to, download the filters and get buddies and talk to each other, to mechazik each other in these critical inyanim. Thank you very much. Marv, we'll have Marv in 2 minutes.
It was a good question.